Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
Listen, Nerd Right Radio!
Nerd Alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
Welcome to episode 16 of Nerd Pride Radio. 16. It's 4 squared. It's 2 to the 4th. It's the base of our hexadecimal number system. There's nothing not to love about 16. This is a great episode. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones, and I am a D&D nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, a computer nerd, movie nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, and there's also 7 other kinds of nerd that I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place where I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that I just can't fit in my brain anymore. And of course, my co-host this week is Connor McLeod of the Clan McLeod.
There can be only one.
And you know what? I think we're getting some feedback. Okay, this is all going to be dedicated to feedback that I am getting on the blog portion of the website. All right, most of my communication I do on the forums. I've told you that a million times. If you guys want to talk to me, come sign up for the forums and talk. I read everything out there. I respond to most stuff. I'm very easily accessible. But occasionally I get responses to stuff on the blog posts, which I use just to put up the podcast so that iTunes can find it and all of that. And most of these are pretty informative. Let me give you a sample, just a sample of the stuff that I've received in the last couple of weeks here. So these are all comments by users on the blog posts portion of the forum. So here, the first one is a comment on episode 14, which was Katie Bar the Door. And this comment comes from a user named HomeDepotCoupons.org. And HomeDepotCoupons.org says, "I have been browsing online greater than 3 hours lately, but I by no means discovered any attention-grabbing article like yours. It's beautiful value enough for me. In my opinion, if all webmasters and bloggers made excellent content as you probably did, the web will probably be much more helpful than ever before." Wow. And then they provide a link, of course, to their own website. Just sweet of them to think of me. So the next one was from a user named Subliminal. And Subliminal is commenting on episode 11, the punk rock episode. And Subliminal says, "We are a gaggle of volunteers and opening a new scheme in our community. Your website offered us with valuable info to work on. You've done an impressive process, and our entire neighborhood will probably be thankful to you." Probably. Which is great, because we all know that when you're starting up a community project, probably home building is what I'm guessing from the context here, there is nothing more useful to you than lessons in punk rock. So I'm glad you took something out of that, Subliminal, and I hope you keep listening. Next one. A comment on episode 13, that was Dutch Plans and Clown Funerals. And this is from the city of Killeen, which, by the way, caught my attention. I wouldn't, sometimes you worry that some of these might be spam, but I noticed the city of Killeen immediately. It catches my eye because 2.5 years ago or so, on my way home from summer vacation, I got pulled over for speeding in the city of Killeen in Killeen, Texas. And I wound up having to pay an exorbitant sum of money for them to not officially ticket me and report it to my insurance company. It actually seemed very much like I was bribing them, like they were extorting money from me. But either way, I got the ticket cleared, and it didn't go to my insurance, and therefore it was worth the cash. But the city of Killeen writes to me and says, "Thanks for any other great post. Where else could anyone get that type of information in such a perfect means of writing? I have a presentation next week, and I am on the search for such information." Clearly, they were doing a presentation on episode 13, and they needed a write-up of it, and there was nothing better for a write-up of episode 13 than my blog post. So I'm glad I could help out. The next one is from tattoo fonts/poetry girl. Sounds sexy. And she's not actually commenting on one of the episodes per se, but commenting rather on the Deadpool. We run a Deadpool here, and we have a related to the Deadpool. She's commenting on that. And her feelings on our Deadpool? Wonderful issues altogether. You simply received a brand new reader. What would you recommend in regards to your put-up that you just made a few days ago? Any positive? Well, that is a great question. And seeing as how the last post in the Deadpool had been several weeks before this, I'm not sure which one she's referring to. But thanks for the contribution, and keep listening. I appreciate it. And then the final one, and this is probably the one dearest to my heart, a comment on episode 12. Episode 12 was Feedback, Fan Fiction, and They Might Be Giants. And this comes from a listener named Electronic Cigarette, which I think is a great name for an online user or a band. Electronic Cigarette is awesome. And Electronic Cigarette says, "E-cigarette quit smoking cigarettes, or even smokeless cigarette. Happens to be an electric-powered product that will stimulate the action of tobacco smoking as a result of doing a breathed-in spray having the real discomfort." Ah, I'm always looking for the real discomfort in my cigarette substitutes. "Look and feel, and sometimes the flavor together with tobacco information involving breathing in cigarette, however, devoid of the odor involving cigarette." Man, that just sounds awesome, doesn't it? The reason I've shared all this, it's like they're not even trying. I mean, it's like they started trying, but, you know, I suppose if I had any other blog going, some of these could be almost convincing, except, of course, that they post up with the name of e-cigarette, and they post up with the name of HomeDepotCoupons.org. But other than that, some of them could almost be convincing. Thanks for the information. That was really great. This was helpful to me. Except, of course, that mine are all blog posts about my podcast, which they don't seem to mention, which really kind of hurts my feelings. But, you know, I get probably 5 to 10 of these a day, and for some reason, I still read all of them, except the really, really long ones. But I still read all of them, and some of them strike me as really, really funny. Because, again, when you put them in the context of my podcast, they make me laugh. But, hey, enough of the feedback. Let's get to updates. First off, an update on the anime project. Holy cow. All right, I told you I was listening to. I was watching Full Metal Alchemist and really enjoying it. And I'm up to episode maybe 8 of the first season of Full Metal Alchemist. But, it hasn't been gripping me and dragging me in where I absolutely have to watch it. But it's, you know, something that I enjoy, you know, just before I go to sleep. My wife's already sleeping, so I'll turn on the TV. I'll watch, you know, a half-hour episode of Full Metal Alchemist, go to bed. Works out really well for me. But this last couple of days, I watched High School of the Dead. High School of the Dead is an anime about a zombie outbreak, and it focuses on these kids in a Tokyo high school and how they battle zombies and how they escape and how they make their way, and then their emotional entanglements in between. And it was brilliant. It was really, really good. And I went and I watched it because my son had been watching it. He was home for a sick day this week, and I happened to catch over his shoulder part of a couple episodes. I didn't actually watch, but it was enough to realize that, hey, I think I actually want to see this from the beginning. And so that's what I did. And I started over from episode 1, and it's only one season. It's only 12 episodes. They are half-hour episodes, which actually cut down for commercials, take out the intro and the closing credits. They're actually literally 20 minutes an episode. So this is 4 hours of viewing to catch the entire series. And I had a great time. I could not stop watching. I pretty much consumed it all in 2 nights. I watched episodes 1 through 6 on Tuesday night, and then Wednesday we were busy, and then Thursday night, last night, Wednesday, so it must have been Monday. It doesn't matter. The days don't matter. 2 nights, and I finished up the entire 12 episodes because it was just that good. And I went back and I looked at one of the original threads where I'd asked for people to give me input, and High School of the Dead was one that Zen had recommended to me. Gave it a couple of warnings. He said, yeah, you know, you're going to have to deal with the fact that there's lots and lots of gratuitous booby shots in this thing. And, oh, man, he is not kidding. There's one episode that has a teeny bit of nudity for one scene, and it's mostly a big joke thing. You know what? Even without the nudity, this thing is really over the top with the sexualization of the women. And we're talking about, I mean, gratuitous boob shots all the time. Every shot, when you do a quick zoom in on any of the girls, it actually is always zooming in on their breasts every time. And as they turn and whirl around, it is these loving slow motion shots of their boobs as they bounce as they turn. One of the women has boobs so big that her boobs get sound effects whenever they jiggle. That's how big they are. And it's not just the boobs, although every girl in it except the little girl, there's a like an 8-7-year-old girl who comes in later in the show. She's not sexualized at all. But all the rest of them, the high school girls, the teacher, they are these enormous breasts. The one that, you know, is built the slimmest with the smallest figure still has breasts that would be enormously misproportioned on a 1970s Barbie doll, okay? These are big women. But it's not just the boobs, they also, and I hate to focus so much on this portion of the show because I really did love it, but there's also lots of panty shots, lots of upskirt shots, lots of, I mean, it was just, it was very exploitation, sexploitation style with these needless shots. And here's the thing that I love about High School of the Dead is that if you had taken out all of that, if these had been humanly proportioned women in realistic shots with all the same action but without the gratuitous focus on boobs and butts and all this, it still was a great story. It was really compelling and a lot of fun to watch. And I'm not saying, you know, this is a brilliant, deep insight on anything particular, but it was a very gripping zombie story, a really well done tale. And some of the emotions were very real, and the interplay between the characters was mostly believable. And I just had a great time watching it. I was just completely hooked by High School of the Dead, and I wish that it hadn't had all the sexual content in it, because it didn't need that. It was so really well done even without that. I will give some caveats. All right, in addition to that, there's lots of language in it. The F word is abundant. And F and A comes up a couple of times, which just sounds awkward. But also the voice acting, some of the voice actors are pretty good, some of them not so good. This is obviously the English dub of a Japanese anime. I take it from Zen's post that he watched it in the original Japanese with subtitles, which I don't know if I would have preferred that or not, because there were some things in the English dub that just felt a little awkward. And like I say, some of the actors weren't quite the best. Didn't matter. Had a great time. The zombies were really, it was a cool take on zombies. The action was spectacular. Yes, you know, like every other anime I get sucked into watching, it did have some of those stupid anime overreaction shots, those extreme, you know, the nerd gets his first look at a half-naked hot girl and blood geysers from his nose because obviously his brain is hemorrhaging at the sight of hot women. You know, that kind of overreaction stuff. And some of it was appropriate, some of it worked. But some of it, and again, I think it's because of the voice acting, was a little out of place. I was making a comparison in my head, and to me, I realized Avatar did some of that with those over, and there's probably a real term for this. I don't know what it is because I'm not an anime nerd yet, but I'm working on it. Avatar: The Last Airbender did some of those emotional overreaction things, the sudden screaming, the big giant single bead of sweat that's softball size and glued to the side of your head, that kind of stuff. Avatar did some of that, but pulled it off really well. It never felt terribly awkward or out of place, but I think that's because the voice actors carried it off. I think it was written really well. And the acting was good, and it just, you could feel it. It made sense in context. Whereas High School of the Dead, they're doing a lot of the same things, a lot of those same reactions and extremes and all this. And sometimes when they shift from, you know, we're having this tender but awkward moment, and then suddenly things get too awkward, and now the guy has to suddenly scream that, no, no, not like that. And suddenly his screaming just, there's no proper emotion in it. It's just this sudden jarring, you know, sweet, tender, awkward, and then suddenly screaming for no reason. It just didn't quite balance. But, I mean, overall, look, I love this enough to highly recommend it to people. If you're, you know, if you're okay with the sexploitation part of it and you're okay with the language, then this is a great zombie show. Totally worth your time. The last complaint I'll give is the way it ended, it seemed clear that they were intending to have a season two. There are lots of unresolved issues, lots of things that they could have done. They end on this weird note that only makes sense if you move into another season. And I have no idea if they're actually building another season. I don't even know how old this show is. I don't know if another one's coming or if this was the end and they just never got back to it. So I wish there was more, maybe someday. But High School of the Dead is finally my anime that I love. I mean, Full Metal Alchemist I liked. There's a couple others that, you know, they're starting to grow on me. But High School of the Dead is the first one that really wowed me and really sucked me in and went, okay, I can find some of these I like. I can find some of these that I love that I can't stop watching. That's awesome. So that's my first update. Now my second update is elevator buttons. Oh my God, I cannot believe. All right, I did the whole bit on elevator buttons and how the door closed button, I had some smartass in the elevator with me telling me how, oh, well, I knew a guy who explained to me that those buttons never work. No, they intentionally disconnect them. They're not allowed to, by law, they have to, okay, whatever. Because I have, again, an elevator in my building right next to my office, and the door close button works perfectly fine and always has. So therefore, this guy was clearly speaking out of his butt. And now not Monday of this week. I'm recording here on Thursday. This is December 1st. So Monday of this week, Cracked.com, those evil, evil, sorry slobs over at Cracked.com, had an article entitled something like 8 Everyday Gadgets That Are Lying to You, or something like that. And the things that are lying to you, the fuel gauge on your car, the crosswalk buttons. All right, and then they got to the elevator buttons are lying to you. And they went and proceeded to say exactly the same thing that this Yahoo from the elevator did, explaining how in almost all elevators, that button simply doesn't work. And they go and cite sources, and they quote some elevator expert who was speaking in a Nova episode on PBS. And this dude, what is his name? Here it is. John Menville from this PBS documentary. Our elevator expert says... And this is, and they had the transcript and everything included, so I know exactly what happened in the documentary. John Melville says, as you'll notice, there are a lot of buttons in the elevator. However, there's one button that doesn't work. The door close button will not close those doors no matter how many times you push it. Actually, the door close button does serve a function. It lets people think they have some control over the elevator, although that's not the case. Oh, curse you, John Menville. You are wrong. You're wrong. I mean, you know, he says here equivocally that that button never works. And obviously he's wrong. And Cracked, to their credit, amends his statement enough to say most of the time these buttons don't work. But it just angers me that here an authority that is as esteemed as Cracked is contradicting me. I thought about including this in the Mike was wrong segment, but then decided no, to hell with all of you. I am not wrong. My elevator button works, and I will not hear anyone speak differently. But what made this really cool in reading through the transcript of that Nova article and then doing some further research and following Cracked's other links, I wound up finding destination dispatch elevators. That means nothing to you, I know, but you'll be excited too in just a moment. You get into one of these elevators, there's no buttons on the inside because you select your destination while you're still outside the elevator waiting. And that way... the elevators, and it only works in huge buildings where you have, you know, 6 or 8 elevators all in a big bank together. And this bank of elevators, all of the elevators communicate with each other. So when you push what floor you want to go to from outside the elevators inside are all coordinated so that they decide which way is most efficient, which elevator is going to bother to stop for you. And it's not always the first one that gets to your floor. No, because it's looking at all the people waiting on other floors, and, oh, look, you're going to floor 5? Well, there's someone waiting on floor 5 to keep going up. So you know what? We'll let this other elevator skip you, and we'll let elevator B pick you up because it's already going that way anyway. And therefore, they found out that they're getting, I think, a 30% increase in efficiency on their elevators by running it this way. Now, it does drive some people a little bit crazy because... well, there's no controls on the inside. There's nothing you can do to pick your floor once you're in it. So a lot of people, especially if there's a crowd, may get in the elevator without realizing that, oh, crap, I had to have picked a floor first. And so it's hard to use in hotels where every single person that shows up at the hotel is going to be unfamiliar with your system and have a tough time. But in big office buildings where it's the same people coming in and out every day, awesome system. So I was so excited because do you know what destination dispatch elevators means? That's the first step on my traffic control systems that I was just asking for last episode. Everything ties together. My plan is coming to fruition. This is so good. But now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting, I add it to this here master list, and the best stuff gets spewed out onto all of you every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And the first thing on my master list, it's always the science corner.
She blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you may be in danger of learning something. First up on the science table, dinosaurs had feathers. I love that. I know this isn't news to a lot of you. All right, it's been on the news for the last couple of years. And I've been meaning, I've had dinosaurs had feathers. It's been an entry on my master list since I started keeping a master list. All right, it's one of the first things I thought of. And I just haven't had the inclination to bring it into the show just yet. But this last week, I mentioned something about dinosaurs having feathers to one of my kids because they were studying dinosaurs at school, and he was just fascinated. And so we got to talking about dinosaur feathers. We got to talk about dinosaur behavior patterns and hot-blooded versus cold-blooded versus something in between. All sorts of cool discussion. And so it led me to go look up feathered dinosaurs on the internet because I wanted to show some pictures to Logue. And they're just cool. Go do a search for dinosaurs with feathers, an image search on Google. Do T-Rex with feathers. Yeah, did you know T-Rex? Not all dinosaurs had feathers. Not all of them. But a lot of them did. The ones that eventually, you know, had the same direction as birds. All right, they're not all direct descendants of birds, but closely related to the branch of dinosaurs that became birds. And all of them had feathers. All right, not just Archaeopteryx, which was the recent one. The one everyone knew Archaeopteryx had feathers. But going back before that, the raptors, all right, The T-Rex is the coolest one because everyone knows T-Rex. That's what makes it cool. Go look up pictures of these things, and it's just cool. Just cool. When you think of a feathered T-Rex, and here it is, some of them, it makes it look like a giant chicken. Honest to God, the T-Rex, because it's got that big old fat lower body with those big old thick drumstick legs, once you put feathers on them, it looks like they could be a giant chicken or a giant turkey. Except, of course, with that huge, ferocious, tooth-filled beak. Holy crap! All right, so some of them are a little bit funny. Some of them are still scary and just cool with the sleek, slicked back feathers. Because, see, some of the pictures, you take a T-Rex with feathers, and some of them are drawing it with the feathers in proportion like they would be for a bird. So I'm looking at this picture that is supposedly of an artist's conception of a T-Rex with feathers, and there's feathers coming off the arm. Where, you know, a wing would be on a modern bird, these feathers coming down off the arm are like proportional to the T-Rex. So, I'm measuring them out and thinking, you know, if that was real life, those feathers would be like 14 feet long. No one's growing 14-foot feathers. But, you know, if T-Rex had a bunch of tiny feathers, you know, all in layers, like a fur coat, but a feather coat all the way down, little tiny feathers give them a more sleek look. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And then, you know, once they're feathered, the colors of the plumage can be anything. Your artist's conception of a T-Rex can be almost anything. You want it with racing stripes and lightning bolts? You can make that. Because who's going to prove you wrong? This is great stuff. Honestly, highly recommend. Go look them up. And then, while you're at it, I found out that there were groups protesting the discovery of dinosaurs having feathers. And I'm thinking to myself, But we're finding the dinosaur bones with skin impressions, with feather impressions right there. I mean, it's irrefutable. I mean, if you're going to believe that dinosaurs existed, and you should, then, well, now you've got to believe that some of them had feathers. So who could possibly be protesting dinosaurs with feathers? And it turns out, I don't have the name of the group, but it turns out that they were just a big joke and they were having a lot of fun. And my favorite quote from them, because they have buttons that have, you know, feathered dinosaurs with a big, you know, circle with a line through it and the whole business. But my favorite quote from them is, "Dinosaurs are naked, leathery killing machines. They're not Brazilian carnival queens." Oh, that's awesome. That's going to be my new catchphrase. I was so excited. And I apologize for my voice. I am back in my game mastering chair. I'm back in my home. You'll notice the sound quality is up again. Thank God. Last week was a little rough. For some reason, my upper respiratory tract has been flirting with the idea of catching the flu for about the last 2 weeks. And I'm never quite sick, but I never quite sound healthy either. So if my voice sounds a little off, that's what it is. But while we're in the science corner, I also have, because I didn't know where else to put it, a bit of a pseudoscience corner. And if I could get William Shatner to say she blinded me with pseudoscience, I would play that now, but I can't. In the pseudoscience corner, I don't even have any idea how I came across this, but I came across the planet of Nibiru, I think is how it's pronounced, N-I-B-I-R-U, Nibiru. And Nibiru is supposedly a planet with a 3,600-year orbital period. All right. It was first proposed by a dude named Zachariah Sitchin in 1976. And Zachariah says that Nibiru is an ancient planet that is bigger than Jupiter, and accounts range from anywhere from 1.5 times to 4 times the mass of Jupiter, or God knows, but huge, gigantic planet. But it orbits way out beyond Neptune, way out beyond Pluto. The thing is far out, but cycles in like a comet and makes a close sweep towards Earth and the Sun every 3,600 years. This is their point. And so the last time it came around, well, the Mayans knew about them, the Aztecs knew about them. See, that's why the Mayan calendar predicts the end of the world in December 2012, because that's the next time Nibiru is going to pass next to us. It all makes perfect sense. All right, the ancient Egyptians were familiar with it, clearly. I'm finding this fascinating. I'm reading up on Nibiru, and apparently it's not just this planet that causes perturbations in other orbital systems, and you know, it causes all sorts of calamities on Earth as it passes close by, because now we get into the realm of complete science fiction. I mean, one, clearly, if there was a planet that large, and if it was, you know, it's less than a year away from getting to us. No, it's actually exactly a year away from reaching us. Well, we'd see it by now if it was that big. Clearly, we would see it by now. But that doesn't stop people from theorizing. And then they get completely far-fetched with, oh, well, but see, as it gets closer to us, it throws off the magnetic system of the Earth, thus causing polar shift. It will change the rotation of the Earth. Disasters. Calamity, of course. But even better than that, Nibiru is home to aliens, because the planet of Nibiru originally came from another solar system, another star system altogether. Possibly it's a failed brown dwarf star. We don't know. But it wound up being caught by our solar system, and on one of its early passes through the solar system, it smashed the planet that used to be between Mars and Jupiter. It smashed that planet and caused the asteroid belt to form, and knocked half of that planet into Earth orbit, which then became the Earth. A later pass knocked out a chunk that then became our moon. So Nibiru is actually responsible for Earth and all life on it. All right. The residents of Nibiru, because you didn't know that there were aliens living on it, the residents can influence us most when, of course, they make their close pass. And then they travel to Earth where they mine for gold. That's what they were doing with the Egyptians. And they can shape our evolution. The original humans actually came from an earlier pass of Nibiru when they came over and their workers were mining for gold here. And they decided that they were sick and tired of being common menial peasants, and they would create themselves a slave race to do this gold mining for them. And thus they mixed their DNA with that of Homo erectus, creating the first Homo sapiens. This is all brilliant. It plays out brilliantly. And the problem with it is it's presented as truth. They have so many books written on it that are presented as just the God's honest truth. And more than that, it's now expanded out that there's a new book, and I can't even remember the author's name. He's not worth crediting at this point. But the idea behind it is, because people have said, well, look, if Nibiru is going to be out there at, you know, a bazillion million miles away from Earth or from the sun, you know, how do they have the heat to live? So then he revised it to say, well, yeah, Nibiru is actually not a planet per se. It is a brown dwarf star, so that's why we can't see it. But it does give off enough heat, and there's enough heat from the infrared plus radioactivity that it can provide warmth to its seven moons. And the seven moons that go around Nibiru are where the aliens actually live. And I can't remember the aliens' names, but obviously these guys are geniuses to survive this long. And so now we have Nibiru, the brown dwarf, passing close to us with its seven moons. And its seven moons each have their own names and their own effects and things that go on. And it's just, again, if people weren't believing it and passing it around as truth, as this huge conspiracy theory thing, then it's a great science fiction story. Oh my gosh, it's an awesome story. And in fact, for example, the story Stargate, the movie Stargate and the TV series, is supposedly inspired by tales of Nibiru and whatever. It's a cool story, awesome sci-fi story, and yet, again, people choose to believe it. As I'm following through, first off, interesting to note that the planet of Nibiru actually originally, supposedly, the planet and its aliens, came from Zeta Reticuli. And Zeta Reticuli would be a dual star system in the Reticulum constellation in the southern hemisphere. And Zeta Reticuli is interesting because, by the way, that was mentioned in the movie Aliens. Back in 1979, the movie Aliens mentioned it as that's where the distress call was coming from, and so they go down to investigate the little planetoid. Well, that was Zeta Reticuli. Or if you ever saw the TV series 7 Days, which I've never seen, but I thought this was the coolest thing. It was on UPN, so I have no idea how good it was. I never saw any of it. It never aired where I lived. But back in 1998, TV series called 7 Days about a government agency that has managed to create a time machine, but the time machine only lets you go back in time 7 days, thus the name of the show. So when you step into the backstep sphere, you go back 7 days, and it's just big enough for one agent, and so you go back and you get to stop whatever major disaster is going on. And this was the way the plan worked out. We see something horrible has happened, so we send an agent back 7 days, and they get to go stop it. Cool. Where did we get a time machine? Well, from an alien who crashed at near Roswell, New Mexico, and the alien came from Zeta Reticuli. Cool. So it's all tied together. But also, as I'm doing this, I found a dude whose name I now wish I had written down, but he is a astrobiologist with NASA, and he actually writes the article for NASA on their website called Ask an Astrobiologist. And he has, apparently, this is about 3 years ago, had a swarm of people asking him about Nibiru and about how it was going to destroy the Earth and do we really have anything to worry about. And this guy, God bless him, I saw his picture on the website along with the articles, and his picture, I'm guessing he's about 70, and he looks like an astrobiologist. Very nice looking guy, and he's, you know, very reasonable and caring. He's, because he knows he's writing a column about advanced science, but he's writing it towards, you know, ordinary lay people. And so he's very sweet about it, and he's very straightforward, and he's doing his very best to address these. And he has this huge summary page of all the questions about Nibiru and the big controversy, because apparently for a few months, that was the number one question that people wanted to ask an astrobiologist is Nibiru going to kill us? Why isn't the government telling us about this? And that's really what it all came down to, is ultimately just angry letter after angry letter of people accusing him of being in league with Satan, and how dare the government keep this news from us. And we already know for a fact that it exists. And then they'd quote, studies that show that it's really there. And people who live in the southern hemisphere can already see it with the naked eye during the daytime. Why is the government covering this up? Not mentioning the fact that, if people in the southern hemisphere could see it during the daytime, not a single one of them would have posted that on YouTube on their cell phone camera. Really? But anyway, just a fascinating, fascinating series of articles on how carried away people were and how angry they were and how unbelievably gross the misunderstanding of just basic science can be. It was really informative. I will do my best to try and find that article and put a link to it in the show notes or somewhere, because it's interesting. Now, I say I'm going to do my best, which means I'm going to forget about it the minute this sentence is done, but it makes you feel better when I say things like that. And with the science out of the way, let's take a stop over at my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. That's right. Role-playing games, video games, card games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I come here to share it with you. It's what I do. And today's game is Holiday Hangman. Now, I didn't invent Hangman myself, obviously, but Yancey and I have slowly created the evolved version of Holiday Hangman. And we have, outside of our office in this hospital facility that we work in, outside of our office is a whiteboard that just supposedly, you would hang a whiteboard outside your office. You can leave notes that tell where you are, give status updates, or who knows what. We don't use it for any of that. We use it for funny quotes. And we try, and, sometimes we're better than others, but we try to put a funny quote or funny saying, joke of some sort, out on that board every day. And there's lots of people who, let us know, hey, I love stopping by here. I love seeing that. It's just a kind of a little morale booster. That we're on the way to the pharmacy. We're on the way to the library and other things. And so lots of people pass by our office and, it gives people a little kick sometimes. That's good for us. But what we do, and this started, I think this is now our fourth year doing it. So, you know, 3 years ago, during the holiday season, we decided we would start playing Hangman. And we didn't, I don't think we were aiming to play Hangman for the holidays, but it just happened to be that kind of timing. And so we put a Hangman board up on our whiteboard. And so we've got all our markers and all our colors, and we put it up there. And we figured out quickly that we needed some rules because there's lots of people who pass by, and we want everyone to get a chance to participate. And so ultimately what we settled on is we play your standard game of Hangman, except, of course, the Hangman guy has a Santa hat on him or whatever. We have to draw him up there. And everyone who comes by gets to guess one letter. That's all you get. You get one letter per puzzle. And then you can guess at any time. After you've made your initial guess, you've got 5 seconds before other people can butt in. But if you don't get it in the first 5-10 seconds, then anyone can answer it. Anyone can get the point for it. Oh, see, that's the other thing we did. We started keeping score because people were wondering about that because they're like, well, what's our prize? What do we get for winning? And we, of course, don't have a prize. We should keep a bag of candy or something so we can hand out, you know, Hershey's Kisses or something. We don't do that. So we decided that, okay, well, we'll make it a pride thing. We'll keep score. And so now, I mean, it's evolved in this elaborate stuff. Last year, one of the gals bought us some holiday ornaments that are shaped like letters. And so she bought all the ornaments to spell out Holiday Hangman. And so these Christmas tree ornaments now hang on either side of our whiteboard during the holiday season, say Holiday Hangman for us. And we have official printed sheets so we can keep track of the puzzles and who won what puzzle and what their current score is. And it's just awesome. We have such a great time doing it. As a morale booster, as a team building sort of thing, it is great. We start last week, Thanksgiving, we already had people stopping by our office to go, so, Thanksgiving's over. We've got Hangman coming. Coming up, getting close. And then yesterday, being the last day of November, we went ahead and put a sign out on the whiteboard that says, coming soon, Holiday Hangman, watch this space. And people were just stoked. I mean, you know, we've got announcements coming out that the Christmas party is coming up and this kind of stuff. People are like, oh, geez, I hate doing that kind of thing. But Holiday Hangman, ooh, I'm in. When does it start? And it's just a nifty little break during the day. So we have, I think today we started this morning at, I put up the first one at 6:45 is when I got to work. And we have since run, I think, 9 puzzles today. And some of them are going pretty quick because what will happen is people will guess their letter. And then they'll wait around and see who's going to guess the next one. They start grabbing people and dragging them down, going, come on, come on, we got to get. And so we'll wind up with a group of like sometimes 5, sometimes 8 or 9 people all standing around in the hallway just waiting their turn to guess a letter. This is the coolest thing. And, you know, and then eventually someone will get it. And usually what happens is the crowd builds, somebody gets it, and they all go, oh, yeah, I could have gotten that. Oh, and so now they're all kind of pumped. And so they'll wait, and I'll put up another puzzle, and we'll just solve that one almost immediately because we got 8 or 9 people. So they'll get that one in, you know, 2 minutes. And then they're all satisfied, and they all go their way. They've seen the process. And then they'll come back half an hour, 45 minutes later, and maybe we'll try another one. You know, we'll see. Some days during the holiday season, we'll get 3 or 4 in. Some days we get 12 or 15. It just depends on what's going on. And by the end, you guys have heard me talk about Joel in half the episodes I've had. Joel was last year's big champion because his nerd brain works very similarly to mine, and therefore we were kind of on the same wavelength. He got a lot of them. He's very good at this sort of thing, and it worked well for him. But we'll see. He's got some challengers this year, and we're just having a great time. So this is me and Yancey with me creating a game out of, you know, we've got, you know, 5 extra minutes and a whiteboard. What do we do with it? I just had a great time. I know normally my gaming table is all about role-playing and Dungeons and Dragons and this kind of stuff. But every now and then, just the simple things. Break it out. You would be amazed. I mean, this is a facility full of, you know, grown people who are, I think the average age of people in our facility is like 53. You know, so it's not like we've got a young crowd. There's some young ones in there, but it's not like we have a young crowd in general. And they all love to have the chance to just come down, socialize for 5 minutes, and play a little Hangman. You'd just be amazed at how it lights people up. So that is our gift to the facility for the holiday season, and we will run that until New Year's, so the whole month of December. By the time we're done, I think last year, we wound up with a grand total for 20 work days or 18 work days, whatever it is with the holidays in there. We wound up running, like, I think 90 puzzles for the entire Hangman season, and we'll probably do a little bit better than that this time. But, you know, it's just a lot of good fun. Before we go any further, though, it's time for a Nerd Culture Report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you're very, very close. I was just looking at the Guinness Book of World Records. My 8-year-old Logue just bought a copy of the Guinness Book of World Records from a school book fair. And I remember how much I loved the Guinness Book when I was a kid. And I don't know if you've looked at the Guinness Book lately, but when I was young, the Guinness Book of World Records was this very dense, dictionary-looking tome of facts. All right, it's a little small book. I mean, you know, like paperback-sized, but, you know, 600 pages, 1,000 pages, and just packed with every single record they had. Not anymore. Nowadays, the Guinness Book of World Records, at least the version that my kids keep getting every like 3 or 4 years, we get a new one, is now a big hardcover picture book style thing. It's glossy magazine style pages, and they don't have every record in the world because, one, there's way too many, and two, who cares? But they do have all the cool ones, you know. So they have the fastest human being and the tallest building and the the fastest land animal and the most deadly insect and all these other cool things. And they have them divided out into categories, and then they have big glossy pictures to go with them and exciting charts and facts. So not only do you get to see the fastest animal, but then you get to see a chart of, you know, the 5 fastest animals, and you can make some comparisons. It's just a cool book. It's a lot of fun, you know, and, you know, it's not like it's going to be nightly reading, but for a little while it's entertaining. What was most notable to me as I'm flipping through it with my son is the highest grossing movie star of all time. All right, so this is, whether you have a big role or a little role, doesn't make any difference. It is look at all the movies that a person has starred in, has been in, and add up the grand total, the gross of all of those movies. Who is the highest grossing movie actor of all time? I'll give you a minute to think about it, because I wouldn't have guessed this at all, except that I saw his picture there on the page. Oh, I gave away that it's a dude. I saw his picture on the page, so I knew what was coming. It's apparently an 89-year-old man. He is going to be 90 coming up soon. His name is Stanley Martin Lieber. And Stanley Martin Lieber, also known to you as Stan Lee, has been in multiple blockbuster movies, and his films have grossed grand total $4.5, almost $5 billion worldwide. Stan Lee. And to me, one, it's kind of cool that Stan Lee gets that distinctive honor in the Guinness Book of World Records. And yet, part of you goes, yeah, that's kind of cheating, though, isn't it? I mean, he's an executive producer who gives himself a 20-second spot in every big Marvel blockbuster superhero movie that comes out. Is that really fair? And no, it's not, but it is cool. So, I mean, honestly, look at his lineup. He's been in 3 Spider-Mans, 2 X-Men, Fantastic Four, Daredevil, both Hulk movies, Thor, Captain America. You know he'll be in the Avengers coming up. He'll just rack this up to a cool $5 billion right off the top. The ones that surprised me, though, is he didn't have a bit part in Iron Man? Really? I'm surprised by that. If he did, someone let me know, because I'm not, I don't want to do a Mike was wrong segment, because I'm not saying equivocally he wasn't in Iron Man or Iron Man 2. I'm just saying that IMDb didn't have an acting credit listed for Iron Man or Iron Man 2 for Stanley. It has him down as a producer or a writer or credited with characters or who knows what. He's got lots of credits. But it didn't have an acting credit for him. So if I'm mistaken about that, if he was in those films and I'm just not remembering, someone let me know. So what do we have up next, John Cleese?
Now for something completely different.
Yeah, something completely different. This is just stuff I don't have a category for yet. And this week, I have, and again, this is a long-standing topic from my master list, but it keeps coming back up. The internet is magic. Yeah, you probably didn't know this, because you obviously don't spend much time on the internet like I do, but if you did, you would know the internet is complete and total magic. How do I know? Because it's turned me into a handyman. All right, well, not really. I'm still a complete klutz and totally inept, and despite the fact that I fix computers and printers on a daily basis, I don't know the back end of a car from my own butt. But as it turns out, any problem you have at home, any problem you have on the computer with handyman stuff around the house, with whatever, any of this stuff, you look on the internet and there's someone there with a video instruction guide telling you how to do it. And it doesn't mean I can do everything, but there's a lot of things that I'm surprised that, oh, I guess that's not that tough. I just needed to see it. So, for example, one that I couldn't fix, my water heater went out. It just stopped heating. And as it turns out, the diagnosis was simple. I plugged in my symptoms into the internet, and it says, oh, well, here's what's wrong with it. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. What do I do about that? And then the instructions come up and say, well, you just need to replace this part. Oh, all right. Well, and so I start taking my water heater apart, and I'm pulling everything out, and I find the part, but, well, there's no way to disconnect it. I can't get that out of here. And so I finally had to call the plumbing and heating guy, and he showed up. And sure enough, yeah, it wasn't something that I was going to figure out on my own. This one, my water heater, while the solution, the problem was diagnosed correctly, the solution they gave me was correct, my model of water heater simply did not have the same configuration as the others. This part, this heating element of whatever it was a temperature sensor thing. It was built in such a way that there was no way to easily remove it or easily replace it. I couldn't just go pick one up off the shelf at Walmart. I needed to special order it. And so he got me sorted out. But with other things, I mean, replacing the light switch in my living room, I had a dimmer switch in here, and I needed to replace the dimmer switch because, one, it was broken. Two, we never use it on dim anyway. So, you know, to open up the fixture and pull out all the wires and redo everything, takes me all of about 3 minutes. And those of you who have ever done a light switch yourself are going, well, yeah, duh, idiot. It's not like it's rocket science. But I didn't know that because I'd never pulled one out. I'd never looked. But once I did, I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right, Internet. This isn't rocket science. And so I replaced the light switch. My dryer went out. The heating element stopped working in my dryer. I had a cold dryer for a couple of days. And so I went and looked on the internet. They tell me what it probably is. And they say, well, if you have this style of dryer, it's probably going to be pretty easy. And sure enough, I pop the back open. I look down. I'm like, hey, look, there's the heating element. It just pops right out. I take it down to my local appliance dealership. And here's the best part about these people. And I didn't know this either. Auto part shops and appliance shops and things that specialize in this sort of stuff. You bring them your bad parts or suspected bad parts. They'll just test them for you right there. Tell you whether or not it's good. Again, those of you who are a little bit handy, you know this already. But for some of the rest of us, I'm like, really? I'll just bring in a part. I brought in my bad battery from my wife's car. And I bring in my bad battery, and they'll just tell me whether or not it's good. I don't have to buy anything from them. I don't have to do anything. They'll just pull out all their testing equipment. They'll run through all this stuff and go, yep, that sucker's shot. I'm like, all right, thanks. See ya. And off I go. They're so nice. So I pulled the heating element out of my dryer, and I mean, it was a long process. I disassembled the whole dryer, pull out this thing underneath. There's my heating element. So I pulled it, take these coils down to my local Maytag, and they plug it in, and the lady behind the counter goes, yep, it's burnt out. And then all of a sudden, as she's saying it's burnt out, because she was looking at it saying, well, it doesn't look like it's bad, but oh, nope, it doesn't test good. And then all of a sudden, like, the center section just falls apart. She's like, oh, yeah, nope, there it is. It's definitely broke. And so, you know, they had the spare one on hand. They tested it out to make sure it was good. They even, because the heating element came mounted in this special bracket, they're like, well, you want us to mount it in the new bracket for you? I'm like, hell yeah. And so they got it all set up. All I had to do was bring it home, plug it in, fastening all my screws again, boom, brand new dryer. I'm just thrilled with this sort of stuff. And there's a lot of it that I've done. You know, my kitchen faucet, I drilled through the counter and installed the little sprayer handle. I had to replace the faucet anyway, so why don't I get the little dish sprayer thing so that I can, you know, pull it out with the hose and spray my kids, because that's the only thing you really use it for, right? Yeah, I did that kind of stuff. A million computer problems. There is not a computer problem that you can't find solutions for somewhere eventually. Now, like my recent problems with my Apple iTunes, it took me a while, but eventually I dug through and the internet gave me a, hey, did you try this? Well, no, I didn't. Thank you. And sure enough, that was my solution. Better yet, and this is my absolute favorite of the internet magic, is, again, I do this for a living at work, fixing computers, fixing printers, stuff like that. And I had brand new giant printer that we had just put into some office in there, and it's a Hewlett-Packard 4015. I don't know if you've ever played with a 4015. These things are awesome. One of the best printers ever. Hewlett-Packard, once every few years, they come out with that model that is, oh man, this is the printer I want. And this thing, if you've got, you know, a big office, lots of people printing to it, you need a real workhorse of a printer, this was the one. And so I love this new printer. And we actually wound up putting in three of them in our building. And one of them, the gal calls me up and she says, yeah, Sometimes the printer prints a big, thick black stripe down the side of the page. And I'm like, really? So, you know, bad fuser, bad toner, let's go look at it. No, there's nothing wrong with the printer. Huh, but it's printing this black stripe. And not all the time. Sometimes it prints a black stripe. Sometimes it prints just fine. And there is no in-between. All right? It's not like it's like fades in and out. It's like either this huge, dark, crisp, thick black stripe is printed there, or it prints fine. All right, so I go on the internet and I look it up, and I mean immediately, you know, big black stripe printing on 4015. And what does it give me? Yeah, apparently there's a design flaw in the 4015. It's not as perfect as I thought. Apparently the back vents, the airflow vents, are angled such that if sunlight gets through those vents, it strikes directly on the rollers and causes that black stripe on that one spot. And that's it. And I'm like, you are kidding with me. So the solution is I get to look like a genius. I walk back up to our office and I say, oh, hold on. We figured out what's wrong. Hold on. I grab the printer. I rotate it 90 degrees so the back is facing the wall. I'm like, there you go. All fixed. Really? That's it? Yeah. Oh, magic. I am telling you, the internet is magic. So if you've got a problem, like I say, I always encourage you to call a professional if you need it, because again, there's going to be times that you're over your head. But there's a lot of things that you'll be surprised that, you know, with a little common sense, you can get in there and fix. You may have to buy yourself some tools, but there's some stuff you can actually do, or at least there's some stuff I can actually do, and I'm completely incompetent when it comes to this stuff. So, you know, follow my example. Save yourself a little money. It's cool. Now we're all the way up to music. And the music for this week, I actually really debated on this one because I had so many things that I wanted to play, some new bands. And then I realized, no, most of the new bands I want to play, it's a little early. So I love them. I really love them. But I need to give them some more time, let them kind of mellow and mature and get a better feel for the intricacies of them before I start sharing them with you. Because some of them, maybe it'll turn out that in a couple weeks I'll think they're stupid. So I'm going to save those. And instead, I decided, instead of going new music, why don't I go exactly the opposite? And here is a song that is a recent find for me. I found it about a year ago, but it's an old song. It is actually from the 90s, and the group is called Placebo. And now, if you are one of my listeners from the UK or Europe, then you probably have already heard of Placebo and know exactly who they are, because they were huge in Europe. And in the U.S., their albums never charted. They had two top 40 hits in the U.S. over the course of about 10 years. And this was one of them. And I wound up, I listened to, on my satellite radio, I listened to the 90s grunge alternative station, which I love because that was my music. That was my era. And this song came up on the grunge station. And I'm like, this is from the 90s? How come I never heard this before? It just floored me. But it was exactly my kind of song, exactly the kind of song I would have loved at that time. And that feeling of it, that spirit of it, just carried over with me. And so I love it. I have put it on my favorites playlist, and I can't stop listening to this thing. Every time it comes on, I'm excited. So I will let you guys listen to it, see what you think.
Which makes us blessed and makes for stormy weather. A friend indeed, a friend who...
see. That was great. I mean, is it a little dated? Are these guys like the 90s spiritual successor to Depeche Mode? Yeah, clearly they are. Was Depeche Mode still running in the 90s? Barely. They were popular when I was in college, but I think they stopped doing. I think Violator was the last thing I bought by Depeche Mode. Anyway, that was Pure Morning by Placebo, and just great stuff. As it turns out, I did some more research, because I knew I was going to use the song now. I did some more research on Placebo to figure out why I had never heard of them. And, of course, it was because they were only in Europe for the most part. But then their most popular song is Running Up That Hill. Really? Running Up That Hill? I'm like, do I know that song? And so I went and played it, and I'm not going to play it for you now. But, oh, I do know that song. It's not bad. I mean, it's a decent song. But why is it popular? Oh, it got used in the Vampire Diaries. And suddenly Placebo gets a U.S. surge because everybody's heard the song now. So anyway, try that one out. Buy that one. I love Pure Morning. So with one song out of the way, where are we left? Oh, that's right. It's the word of the week. All right. This week's word is dubiety. Dubiety, D-U-B-I-E-T-Y, dubiety. Dubiety means a feeling of doubt. Dubiety. All right. Doubtful, doubtfulness, a feeling of doubt. The other word that means the same thing and gets more use nowadays than dubiety is dubiosity, which I've always thought dubiosity is a stupid, stupid word. I mean, it takes dubious and then stretches it out even further to make dubiosity. That's just too cumbersome. But dubiety, if you're going to need a term for a feeling of doubt, you know, a sense of dubiety, oh, I like that. So anyway, that's my new word, and I've never even heard it before, yet, man, it feels so right. So I'm going to make an effort with this one, and you should too. Your mission is to find a place to use dubiety in your everyday life. You can use it in casual conversation, or better yet, you can come to my forums, sign up, and use dubiety somewhere in conversation with us. That will do two things. It will, A, show that you listen to the podcast and prove how cool you are, and two, A and two, yeah, that's right, and two, it'll show that you are intelligent enough to apply the knowledge that you have gained. And that's what we all want for ourselves, right? But that means it's time for the Badass Movie Quote of the Week. And this is from Christopher Walken in True Romance. You know who I am, Mr. Worley. And of course, poor Mr. Worley has no idea who he is. I'm the Antichrist. You got me in a vendetta kind of mood. You tell the angels in heaven you never seen evil so singularly personified as you did in the face of the man who killed you. That's badass. Now, you'll note I did not do a Christopher Walken impression because I do one. It's just horrible. And so therefore, I didn't want to ruin it even further than I already do by trying to put on a Christopher Walken impression. Christopher Walken can deliver any line and completely kill. And this is a line from True Romance. With Christopher Walken playing Vincent Cocatti, is I think how you pronounce his name. But of course, it's not just Christopher Walken delivering this line. Because it's from True Romance, it's a line written by Quentin Tarantino. And Quentin Tarantino, if nothing else, knows how to write some badass dialogue. And I love that line. Now for the next song, I'm following the same theme of a recent find of an older song. And this is a group called Ockerel River. Ockerel, O-K-K, Ockerel. And Ockerel River, the name is taken from some Russian classic novel whose name I recognized and now don't remember. But Ockerel River is an indie band, an indie rock band, and they've been around for about 10 years or so. And this is a song that I actually found. I did, I don't know, after I got my iPod, a couple months into the iPod, I decided I was going to go out to the internet. I was going to find sites where artists were giving away their music. They were giving away samples of their music for people to try out. And it got a lot of indie rock bands and small-time players and this kind of stuff. And Ockerel River was one of those. And I got this song for free. And so I had this huge folder of free stuff I found on the internet. And it all got added into my iTunes. And a lot of it I listened. And some of it I liked. And some of it I didn't. And about 2 months ago, I was flipping through that folder. And I'm like, hey, I have never listened to some of these. How come these have never been played? And so I tried Ockerel River, and particularly this song, which is called For Real. And I was like, wow, I really like that. So I did some more research on Ockerel River, and they are, you know, critically well received, and specifically, they get credit for having clever and deep lyrics and very complicated music, and I don't get any of that because I'm not smart enough. My music nerdiness has not quite reached that level yet, and that's where, actually, when it comes down to things like indie rock, I wish I could appreciate some of the subtleties of the music, and so, but to me, I just hear it and I like it. All right, it's a good tune. So I'm gonna give you a shot. Let's listen to this one.
Some nights I thirst for real blood, for real knives, for real cries. And then the flash of steel from real guns in real life really fills my mind. I really miss what really did exist. Had your throat so tight. And I miss the bus as it swerved from us, came crashing to its side. Sometimes the blood from real cuts feels real nice when it's really mine. And if you want it to be real, come over for one night and we can really, really climb.
Very nice. That was Ockerel River with their song For Real off of the album Black Sheep Boy. I recommend checking them out. You can get all this stuff on iTunes. Good stuff. But with the music out of the way, we've reached the time for the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do those topics come from? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me babble on about something? Then you need to send your question or your topic to me by email, or, better yet, send it to me in a private message on our forums, and I will add it to this Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be, which is not entirely true, because this week, the Pod-O-Matic is all about whatever Zimnipot wants it to be. All right, this was Zimnipot's suggestion, and he was dead right. I'm looking through my list before the show, and it turns out that I have 67 total entries on the Pod-O-Matic list. And of those 67, 34 of them are from Zimnipot. So if you can do math, that means barely over half of all of my entries are from Zimnipot. I need to clean these out. So today, instead, we are going to do the Zimnipot-O-Matic, and we're going to get rid of some of these. What I've done is I've taken his 34 entries, and I've arranged them out on my table so that they fill up all the entries from 1 to 100, because that's what R2 rolls, is 1 to 100. And that left me with one left over, so I am completely throwing out the question, what is your favorite sock color? Well, I will never do that one. The answer is black. And instead, our first number that R2 has rolled, 20 minutes ago now, is number 80. 80, this one is from Zimnipot. Surprise. And Zimnipot says, can insanity bring on greater creativity? That depends on how you define creativity. I am not going to purport to be an expert on where creativity comes from, although I do have a Bachelor of the Arts degree in psychology, so I am an expert. But, I mean, I don't know. For me, does creativity often come during times of mental stress? Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you're on a project and you're under a deadline, why is it suddenly at the last minute when the deadline is pressing down on you that suddenly you've been locked up and now everything just spews out and you have this huge burst of creative activity? But maybe that's just born out of necessity, and maybe the creativity, quote unquote, that comes out of that process maybe the quality is just not what it would have been had you learned to actually pace yourself and learn to produce content on a regular basis. You know, I don't know for sure. But, you know, it would seem to me, my experience with that sort of thing shows me that mental stresses can certainly produce what seems to be very creative action. And so it would seem that mental illness, insanity, these could cause mental stress, disassociation, whatever, that leads to creativity of a sort, possibly. It's a tough question to answer because, again, I'm not a mental expert. But I will tell you that back when we were in college, and I'm debating whether or not to share this story. Number 43, another one from Zimney. All right. This one says, if the last movie you had watched had been a pizza, what kind of pizza would it have been? What kind of question is that, Zim? Are you serious with this? Okay, but I will do my best to answer it because that is the kind of host I am. The last movie I watched was Freeze Frame, which is great, great little indie sort of movie from Britain. And in Freeze Frame, it is Lee Evans is the star. He's the guy. He was in Something About Mary. He played the guy on the crutches, the one with the fake British accent, which we now find out was a real British accent. But anyway, in Freeze Frame, he plays a guy who was, according to him, falsely accused of murder 10 years ago. And he thinks the police are out to get him. And so therefore, since that day, he has been constantly filming himself 24 hours a day for the last 10 years, because if they ever come after him again, and he knows that they're going to come after him again, then he will have video evidence of everything that's ever happened to him in the last 10 years, and there's no way they can pin anything on him. He is essentially filming himself 24/7 in order to create an airtight alibi at all times, because he knows he's innocent. And the movie is really, really well done. Holy cow, it was good. I mean, really good. I mean, it takes some dark twists. It starts dark, and it just keeps going there. And by the end, there was all sorts of ways that you were sure this movie is going to completely cop out on you. And then it doesn't. And it gives a very satisfying ending. I was amazingly surprised. Because to me, especially with thrillers and mysteries and stuff like this, the ending to me at horror movies, the ending to me is really, really important. And I hate a cheesy cop-out ending. Because I hate it when I've been gripped the entire time. This movie has me completely sucked in. And at the very end, I need the payoff. I need the payoff that ties it all together and says that, okay, yeah, I had all this tension and this anxiety, this worry for the characters. I need to know that all that was justified at the end. So I come back and you can't give me a proper ending? Well, then, you know what? Then you were just playing me. It was just a trick. There was no real story. You're just making this stuff up. Which, again, it's a movie. I know they made it all up anyway. But you know what I mean. All right, but Freeze Frame was really good because it didn't do that. So if it had been a pizza, it would have been a pizza that probably would have contained pepperoni, because spicy, a good thick solid crust, because the base of it was solid, but pepperoni, but then also corn and pineapple. Why? Because these are elements that I would never put on a pizza, but I bet they'd be really good. All right? The pineapple for that just little bit of sweetness. The corn, because now this, okay, I would put corn on a pizza if that was an option at my local Domino's or Pizza Hut, because, oh my God, I love corn on a pizza. They served that when we lived in Japan, well, when my family lived in Japan and I stayed with them for a long time. The local pizzeria. The Japanese don't know pizza. They have no idea what Americans are supposed to put on a pizza, so they have everything. I mean, they go balls out with this stuff. And my favorite, I wasn't really adventurous with trying it, but my favorite was corn on a pizza. Oh, that's great. It's really, really good. And so, for me, that's what this pizza would be. A bunch of unexpected elements all put together on the same pizza and on this nice, solid, thick crust. Probably a thick, garlicky crust, because that's the best way to do pizza. And then you're going to try it, and you're going to think that there's no way that this could possibly come together, and yet it does. Oh, you can't go wrong with that. Number 36. This one's from Zimney. Zimney says, what side of the bed do you sleep on? Man, you get personal, Zim. This one, what side of the bed do I sleep on? I sleep on the side away from the door. Ta-da! Which in my current bedroom, the one that I've been in for 15 years, is the left side of the bed. As you're standing at the foot of the bed and facing it, I'm on the left side of the bed. But it's always the side away from the door. That's just the way it goes. If we go visit somebody and we're staying in their spare bedroom, or if we're in a hotel somewhere, or any room that we're in, my wife always has to sleep on the side facing the door, and I always sleep on whatever the other side is. And that's just the way it goes. This is, I don't know if it's a safety issue. I don't know if it's a paranoia thing. I don't know what it is, but for her, she has to be facing the door. She has to be able to see the door clearly. She has to be on the side closest to the door. Same thing with restaurants. Not necessarily the door, but she has to be on the side of the table that gives her the best view of the door and of the open area of the restaurant. She has to be able to see what's coming her way. Whereas me, I could care less. It's really fine for me, so I'll just take whatever. But that's where I sleep. 69, dude! This one is from... Hold on. Oh, it's from Zimney. And Zimney says, what was your first stuffed animal and what was its name? I don't remember my first stuffed animal. I'm sure I had tons of them that I don't remember. The first one that I can remember having, and because I know I had tons of them before, bears and all sorts of stuff. First one I remember having was a stuffed squirrel that I got for Easter when I was probably 7 years old, 6 years old. I don't remember. And I named the squirrel Eddie because one of my friends in the neighborhood, his older brother, he was 3 years older than us, so he would have been 10 at the time. His older brother was Eddie, and Eddie was all about justice and fair play. He had this oldest sibling thing where he was the one who settled arguments. When the little kids were all arguing, he would be the one who came in and settled things and made everything better and helped. I mean, he was just a good kid at the time, or at least seemed so to me, and I always looked up to Eddie, and I respected him, and so I named my squirrel Eddie. And I swear to God, the first weekend I had him, we were doing a backyard campout, which a backyard campout in New York in April? Are you serious? But we did. We were out in a tent in the backyard, and in the middle of April, surprise, it came pouring down rain in the middle of the night. And all of us wound up going into the house, and we had to leave all of our stuff behind. And so we came out the next day, and we pulled out all the sleeping bags and all the toys and everything that had been left in there. And then they wound up. He wound up throwing the tent away. They decided they weren't going to, it had been an old tent anyway. They weren't going to salvage it, and they threw it away. And Eddie the squirrel apparently had been in the mud at the bottom of that tent, and he was gone. Gone forever. And I cried, and I cried. And they told me that they went back and they looked, but they never saw anything there. Oh, they're lying. They never looked. They didn't want to dig through the muddy tent mess at the bottom of a garbage can. They lied to me. Eddie was in there, and they let him go. Oh, it hurt so bad. 16! Just like it's episode 16. This is going to be the best one in the list, I promise you. Let's find out. Zimney says, do you believe in ghosts? And then second question, how about aliens? No, Zimney, I don't believe in ghosts. Have you listened to the podcast? But I know you submitted this question before I had my discussions about ghost hunters and stuff like that. Do I believe in aliens? Of course I believe in aliens. I believe that there is life on other planets. I believe that this universe of ours, this galaxy, is full of life and that we will find it eventually. It is out there. Do I believe that there's intelligent life other than us? Yeah, probably somewhere. Do I believe that we will ever encounter that life? That's more debatable. I'm sure we will find life of some sort somewhere. Will we recognize sentient life sometime in the course of human history? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know how common that would be. But do I believe that aliens have visited our planet? Absolutely not. Of course they haven't. Oh, yeah, let me back up all the way back to Nibiru and my discussion from the pseudoscience corner earlier in the show. Yeah, that's the other thing, is that Nibiru actually factors in really huge into a lot of the ancient aliens theories, such as the Ancient Alien TV show that I hate so much. Yeah, it's the same sort of thing, that it's the aliens from Nibiru who have helped along human civilization, created humans out of Homo erectus, and, you know, set us, you know, created all of our elements of human civilization, the Great Pyramids, that there's no way we could have built those pyramids without the aliens from Nibiru helping us out. Whatever. No, I don't believe that aliens have visited us. I don't believe they're here now. I don't believe that we're probably going to encounter them in our lifetimes at all, but they're probably out there somewhere. Probably. 71. Okay, 71 from Zimny. Best morning commute. Jetpack or flying car? Flying car? Have you seen the jetpacks? Because here's the thing. We have jetpacks now. We've had jetpacks for 40 or 50 years. And the technology for a jetpack has not substantially changed in all of that time. And unless you are a highly trained jetpack user, you're going to crash. And even if you are a highly trained jetpack user, they take a lot of fuel. And they're really, that's a heavy thing to be carrying on your back and really, really dangerous. And anyway, flying car, definitely the way to go. In a million different ways, but most importantly of which is because if I had a flying car, that means we've already got the technology that I don't need to fly it. I'm going to hop in my flying car, I'm going to plug into the traffic grid, and I'm going to punch in my destination, and I am going to kick back and enjoy myself for that 3-minute ride it takes me to get cross country. That's awesome. Number 45. I'm going to see, you know what, the podcast should almost be done, but I'm going to see how many of these I can get through, because we got to clear these up. 45. Zimny Pot, when was the last time you stayed up all night? Oh, gosh, I barely remember. I stayed up all night, I know, in college many, many times, but that was 20 years ago. I stayed up all night because for the longest time I worked third shift, and there was weird, weird schedules, so staying up 24 hours in a row was not uncommon back then. Since then, the best I can do for staying up all night is probably, you know, a time that I've stayed up until 3:30 in the morning to finish reading a book, or the time that we stayed up until all hours because we were playing a game of Pathfinder. Oh, that was great. That was, I don't know if I've even talked about that on the podcast yet, but this was a few months back, but we had a marathon session of Pathfinder, Dungeons and Dragons. And I mean, I haven't done that since I was in college. All right. When I was in college, when I was in high school, it was nothing to have, you know, friends over every weekend, every other weekend, and we would play literally from, you know, 11 in the morning until 10 or 11 at night. You know, an 8-hour day was normal for a gaming session. We would play Dungeons and Dragons forever. And then I stopped playing with people in person because, well, we moved and we got jobs and, you know, everything moved to online games and just a different style. And so, although I guess I had a couple of really late night sessions playing online games, because to do the online games, you kind of have to wait for the kids to go to sleep. So I wouldn't get a game started until 9 o'clock at night. And then we would wind up playing until 2 or 3 in the morning. But when we did our Pathfinder D&D game recently, it was a few months ago, I wound up, we played an 8 or 9 hour session and we didn't stop playing until after 1 in the morning. And finally, one of the guys had to get home. And so it took a while. You know, we got everything wrapped up, and then I had to give everybody a ride home, which is quite a ways. And so by the time we got back home, it's 2:30 in the morning, and it took a while. And so that was, you know, again, late nights is all I can really give you, Sam. I don't have all-nighters. Also, when my youngest son was a baby, I was working a second job as a cab driver, and I love driving cab. I'll have to tell you guys some cab driving stories in a later podcast, because they're awesome. But when I was driving cab, eventually I cut back all my cab hours, and all I was doing was driving for the college. There's a college about 30 minutes away from us. I was driving for the college on Thursday nights. That's their big party night, and the school would provide free cab rides for all the students. And so I would get out there, and I would work from 10 until 2 in this neighboring town. And I did that every Thursday for a whole school year. And I loved doing it, but man, it wrecked my schedule. It wrecked me because we'd get done at 2. Well, you don't get back to town until 2:30, which means, okay, 2:30, and now I have to go gas up the cab. I have to clean it up, report back in, get everything checked in, file the paperwork. I don't get home until after 3 o'clock. every single Thursday night. And then I would wind up, you know, I get home after 3 o'clock. If I'm lucky, I'm in bed asleep by 3:30. And then my alarm goes off at 5 and just destroyed my Fridays, destroyed my weekends because I was constantly trying to catch up on sleep. But man, it was good extra money and provided me with some great stories. Somebody send me a Podomatic asking me about those, and maybe I'll tell you. Number 27, 3 cubed. ZimniPod asks, Nordic people, yay or nay? Well, Zimni, since you're from Sweden, immediately you get a big yay. Of course, I love Nordic people, but it's not just because of you, Zim. Although you're a large part of it, I love Vikings. I love the whole image of it. And I know Viking culture is a big romanticized thing, and it's not really okay. And I know the history because I've listened to tons of it, and it's great, great stuff. My favorite Viking of all time, King Harald Hardrada. He is awesome. Okay, and I've got all sorts of Viking stuff, Viking history. I love Nordic people. You can't go wrong with Nordic people. They gave us lutefisk. How can you go wrong with lutefisk? They gave us reindeer herders. I mean, seriously, where would Santa get his vehicle if he didn't have reindeer? Thank you, Nordic people. Ka-ching, number 40. ZimniPot says, what's your biggest what if? And he has what if in quotes. All right, I don't know if you mean this as a personal what if, like a biggest what if I had done this or what if I had ever, you know, okay, because that's not how I'm going to answer it. My biggest what if is I love thinking of what if stories. I love thinking of alternate history stories. I'm not a big reader of alternate histories, but I consume enough of them, I guess, and I enjoy that concept of what if. And my biggest what if for me involving history is what if, and that, let's back right up to the last question and go back to Harald Hardrada. What if Harald Hardrada had taken England in 1066? All right, what if in 1066, the last year that the British Isles were successfully invaded by a foreign power, what if in 1066, instead of the Normans invading, what if it, which, by the way, the Normans descended from good Nordic Vikings themselves, what if the Normans hadn't won, and what if it had been Harald Hardrada and his Vikings who had taken over in 1066, all right? Or alternately, what if they had driven back both sets of invaders and England hadn't fallen? But that's boring. In this particular case, they had two enemies to face, and the English king had to choose one way or the other. Who is he going to defend against first? And he chose to defend against the Vikings first. He chose to face off against Harald Hardrada and his men first and won. And then he went to go face the Normans and lost. What if he had reversed that order? What if the information had been different and he did something different? How would that country have turned out differently if Vikings had been ruling? Oh, that's too cool. All right, that's my biggest what if. Number 19. This one is from? It's from Zimni. All right, go Zim. If you could press a button and make anyone in the world instantaneously explode, who would it be? What a great question, Zimni. And my answer, sadly, and you're going to think it's a cop-out, nobody. I wouldn't do that. If I was given the power to just instantly kill one person, I would not be able to do it because that's just who I am. And I understand there are some very, very bad, horrible people in this world. Depending on your politics, depending on your worldview, there are lots of horrible people out there that I'm very convinced that if I could get rid of this one person, the world would be a better place. I know that, but I don't think I could do it. And I don't believe in killing. I have, you know, I've had debates online about this forever. I don't believe in the death penalty. I don't, you know, my views are in some ways unique, in some ways not. But I just couldn't do it. I'm sorry. I can't take a good kill, and I'm not even going to conjecture as to who would be a good choice if I were willing to kill. So that one's done. Number 9. This one's from ZimniPot. And ZimniPot says, hot pie or cold pie? Well, I don't care. Who doesn't like pie? I mean, look, I like a good hot pie, but pretty much all the pie I eat is cold. I like pumpkin pie. I like chocolate silk pie. I like any of those, you know, fancy pies that are basically pudding with candy in them. Oh my gosh, like the Heath bar pie or the peanut butter cup pie or any of that stuff. I don't care. I'll take a lemon meringue. I'll take a lemon supreme. I don't like the stuff with the real fruit because I'm weird about textures and chunky stuff in my food and all that. Anyway, I'm bizarre. I understand that. But usually I eat cold pie. But, you know, if I got pumpkin pie and it was still warm out of the oven, okay, I'm good with that too. That's still good. I have no problem with this. Although you still got to let it chill for a while. But you get my point. I'm not picky about it. I just mostly eat cold pie. 36. This one's from Zimney. Zimney says, one night, you wake up because you heard a noise. You turn on the light and find that you are surrounded by mummies. And he has mummies all in capital letters, so they're really, really scary. The mummies aren't really doing anything. They're just standing around your bed. What do you do? This is what an odd condition to place on it. Harmless yet scary monsters are standing around. Look, clearly, realistically, I'm going to roll out of bed as quietly as possible and sneak the hell out and find a room or a place that doesn't involve a bunch of mummies. Possibly have to shut and lock the door and close them all into my bedroom. I'm assuming that's where they all are, is in my bedroom. I don't know. I would look up mummy disposal in the Yellow Pages. I really don't know. I don't know how to address that. Now, in a more heroic fantasy setting, clearly I would reach for my katana, which I keep under the bed, and since they're not attacking me actively, I'll be able to start dismembering them pretty quickly. Mostly going for headshots because they're mummies. They're going to be dry. They're going to be brittle, and I'm not expecting my katana, which is not a real quality blade by any stretch, but you know. It's a blade. I'm not going to expect it to sever bone, but if I go for good neck shots, then I'm hoping that I can just, you know, they're brittle, that it'll just snap off, that I can just pop heads off as I go. And I will expect that these are the kinds of mummies that will stop moving around once their heads are off. And so, you know, 7 or 8 shots, is that how many were in there? That should about cover it, right? Number 95. Finally a high number. Let's see. From Zimney Pot. Hope that I'm pronouncing that correctly. This one says, what was the last lie you told? This one. Number 7. Holy crap. I knew I said I was going to try and burn through these. I did not realize how long this was running. We'll make this one the last one. This one comes from Zimney Pot. And Zimney says, favorite board game at the moment? Oh, you know what? I don't think I have a favorite board game at the moment because I have not been playing a lot of board games. I mean, any. I have Settlers of Catan, and I've just been sitting on it. I keep meaning to whip it out because everyone says Settlers of Catan is awesome, and I just haven't played it yet. I really need to get that out. Does Zombie Cinema count as a board game? I mean, it has a little board, and you move the little pieces up of it, but I don't think that one really counts. That's just more of a tracking system. Otherwise, I don't think I have a favorite board game right now. I'm going to have to get back to you on that one. I'll play some board games, and then I'll make a report. Mostly it is, I mean, it's role-playing games, and it's card games. I do lots of card games because, again, when you've got 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you can play a card game and be done. And, of course, Holiday Hangman, but that's just at work. All right, but now, before I wrap this up, let me just let you guys know that, all right, I told you I had 67. I just ran through, I must have run through 14 or 15, because it looks like I only have 52 entries left on my Podomatic. So I am running short on Podomatic entries. If you guys are listening, and I know some of you are, because this podcast, I put it up over the weekend, and by Monday morning, I've got like 50 unique downloads of it. So there's a few of you listening, and I need you to start giving me some Podomatic entries. So send me an email. Come on over to the boards and send it in a private message, but get me some Podomatic questions because I could use them. And we need to expand this out because the Podomatic is all about you guys. Need to keep it going. This podcast is copyright 2011 by Nerd Pride Radio. The featured music this week was Placebo's Pure Morning and Ockerel River's For Real. The opening and closing theme is from the Beastie Boys' Sabotage, as performed by the Penelopes. The bumper clips are taken from Weezer's In the Garage and She Blinded Me with Science by William Shatner, plus Words by Missing Persons. All bumper clips are available on iTunes. Check them out. Buy them. I would not put them in my show if I didn't love them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes and write a nice review. Or if you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com. Or check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me at any time is come on over to our forum and sign up at nerdprideradio.com/forum. Sign up, send me a message, hang out, and we'll have fun. Testing? Testing. Okay. Let me roll it back and listen. See, that's okay. That's not bad for a $23 MP3 recorder. It's going to have to do. I am on my way to a call right now, and I don't know if that violates the spirit of this whole journal thing, but honestly, my commute is really the only time I have. Dr. Chapel said that I needed to keep a diary of my feelings, and the audio journal is going to have to be it. This is the time I've got. So I hope this is good enough for you, doctor. I don't know what you're looking for. It's okay. All right. What is this? The GPS says go left, but there's no left. There's not even a road here. I assume I'm headed for the giant pink cloud that's dropping lightning bolts over there. Obviously, that's got to be where I'm going. I can see it. I can't get to it. All right. I'm going to pull around here. We'll see if it picks up. Okay. But it's supposed to be a journal of my issues, my problems, right? But I'm not the one with the problem, okay? He's the one with the problem. He's the one that's... His name is Manta Man, all right? He has gills. He talks to fish, all right? And yet, where does he operate? In San Antonio, Texas, in the middle of a drought. There's... What good is Manta Man here? It is the stupidest thing ever. All right, and he's the one with the control issues. He's the one that keeps pushing. Yeah. Okay. Worst part. His weakness. He can't even be away from water for more than 30 minutes, or he starts turning back into mild-mannered Blake Ackerton again. All right. So what do I get? I get a costume with a bandolier full of Aquafina bottles. Aquafina bottles. Yeah, because I know he's got a sponsorship deal going. He has to. Why else would it? Because, it has to be Aquafina. He insists every time. All right. And before we get to a fight, he's always rotating the bottles, making sure the label's out. I know he's got money coming back. And yet, can he afford me a decent GPS in here? No. Can he get me a new costume? No. I don't know who his last sidekick was, but this thing is bagged out in the butt. It is stretched. I can't. Okay, and so it's all together. Everything. It all adds up. You know, every little thing seems tiny by itself, but to put up with it day after day. The guys over at the KBAF Morning Zoo, all right, they actually mentioned our fight with the Waxman, and they did it as a humor piece, and they call me Aquafina Lad. Aquafina Lad, yeah. Which, okay, is humiliating, yes. But it's better than skate, right? I mean, I get Manta Man and skate. I understand. A skate is like baby stingrays or whatever it is. He explained the whole thing to me. I get that it's part of his theme. But then why am I wearing rollerblades? I'm not wearing rollerblades right now. Obviously, I'm driving. But that's just the thing. Once I finally figure out how to get around this stupid detour, and I can get over that stupid pink cloud, and I can fight whatever stupid villain we're fighting now, I'm still going to have to spend 15 minutes when I get out of the car putting on my rollerblades, because I can't show up to a battle without being in costume, right? Is that what we say, Manta Man? It's ridiculous. And besides, once I get out there, what am I going to do? We're going to spend 90% of our time running from puddle to puddle and trying to find water sources so that he doesn't dehydrate again. The Awkwafina only goes so far. I don't even know what we're doing here. This looks like, I mean, it's an abandoned industrial district again, isn't it? All right? Wait, unless our emergencies are at SeaWorld, there's not a whole lot that he's going to do. All right? And he won't use me. I'm honestly a water carrier. I deserve more respect than that. I guess, and that's what it all comes down to. All right? Respect for my feelings. Ironic, right? Because I'm an empath. Ooh. And yet my feelings apparently don't count for anything. So it's going to be, oh, God, what? I about got killed. I'm sorry. All right, you know what? I'm done. I'm done. This journal is a stupid idea. I don't care if this is the only way I can get reassigned. All right, I'll go skip the therapy. This is ridiculous. I'll go through the mediation. It is not worth it to me. I'm done. I'm out.